Welcome to the Team EF Coaching Cycling and Performance Podcast, where we take information from the highest level of sport and make it accessible for all cyclists. I'm your host, Zach Morris, and today I'm sitting down with a definite fan favorite, somebody we'll all know, Miss Allison Jackson. Allison, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So we're coming to you guys from Girona, Spain, at the first ever joint team camp, EF Pro Cycling, male and female teams coming together for the first time, making history. How's it going? How you doing? How you liking it all?
Yeah, good. I mean, I love people. So coming to this camp, there's so many people. I mean, so much staff for like men's side and women's side, but just like so many stories to hear, meeting new people. So that part's been really fun. I just love the social bit.
Have you always been somebody who like gets to know people, or were you inspired by JV's presentation last night?
Yes. Well, I am motivated very easily. But now I just feel like everyone is ready for me to approach them. I would have done it anyway, but I think it'll be received better. But no, I've always loved getting to know people, meeting new people, and yeah, hearing stories.
So you probably get like these questions all the time, right? Like, why are you so fun? You know, why are you so lighthearted? Why are you the only one in cycling like this? And I'm curious if like kind of like first understand a little bit more about you, and then maybe get to know where that side of you comes from and how you balance it all, because cycling is like a super competitive sport. Mm-hmm. Obviously everybody listening to this podcast will know that, but it's becoming more and more and more and more competitive. And so it's kind of interesting to see somebody who can still keep it lighthearted and try to have at least some fun with it, you know, at the highest level. So where are you from? Like, you're from Canada. Like, how did you get into cycling? What's your deal?
Yeah. I'm from a really small little town in Alberta. Just a prairie town. You know, a lot of farming. I grew up doing like all the sports, because in that town, if you're a sport kid, then you have to do all the sports so that you have a team.
Right.
But none of them was cycling. Like, I never saw cyclists riding around or anything.
What sports did you play? Primarily.
Yeah. I mean, everyone learns how to skate.
Okay. Yeah, for sure.
But I played like a lot of team sports.
Did you play hockey?
I never played like officially played hockey. Okay. No, but we played pond hockey.
Yeah, pond hockey. Yeah, that's the best kind of hockey.
Totally. So yeah, but otherwise it was like volleyball, soccer, did some track and field, took ballet class. What else? Gymnastics. Softball. Yeah.
Did it all. Kind of like a little bit like, you obviously know Kelsey Mitchell.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a friend of mine, she has a similar story, got into cycling like later on after all the other sports.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty common, like especially for females. And I think it's and also, you know, Canada, our traditional sports are kind of these team sports, or yeah, hockey, soccer, whatever. And our culture isn't so steeped in cycling,
right?
The cycling world. But I think when you're older, yeah, then you maybe discover, or maybe you have to do it for commuting or whatever you do. I mean, I did a lot of farm chores. I just had a lot of outdoor.
Did you grow up on a farm?
Totally.
Yeah?
Yeah, the family farm still exists out in Alberta. My sister and her family are rolling it over, taking it on.
What kind of farm is it?
Large-scale grain farm, so mostly like wheat and canola. Mm. We also have bison.
Cool.
Bison ranch.
Okay, so when did cycling come into the picture?
Yeah, I got my first bike when I was 19.
Okay.
And basically, I went away to university and I did this outdoor program. Like, it was a gap year for me. I didn't know what I wanted to do after high school. Right. So I had went to this little Christian college that had this sort of like life development course where basically, but we just did a lot of outdoor and guide. Like, later you could go into guiding.
Right.
Into guiding, or I mean, we just had like a finance class so you could learn how to budget, like, okay, stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, I just got really into, this is out in Vancouver, so I got really into the mountains, doing all the like rock climbing. We did sailing and snowboarding or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I always had wanted to surf. So I was swimming all the time.
Okay.
So that if there was never an opportunity where I could learn how to surf, I would be in that water from like dawn till dusk.
Can you surf now?
It's almost like every year I get to do a surf trip. Okay. A lot of it's been like in Australia.
That's sick.
When we go to a tour down under. But yeah.
You're like, all right, guys, I'll do the first race of the season, but I'm going a week early and surfing.
Totally. Right. Or World Championships in Wollongong was awesome. I stayed for the week after, and it was like off season.
Especially because it's such a long trip. Like,
yeah, stay out there, enjoy it, do a bit of like what the locals do.
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, then I basically at the time I had been like swimming, biking, and running for like different things.
Okay.
And then someone said, "Oh, are you training for a triathlon?" And I was like, "What is that?" But I joined this guy. He was an Ironman athlete. And I went to a race and qualified for Amateur Worlds. So I was like,
right. First crack.
Yep. So I was like, okay, I think I have a little bit of talent here. So let's just like, one of my life mottos is do well with what you have. So that you like reassess like what's going on in your life at the moment. Like these things are going really well. I'm just going to dig in 110% into these. And the other things that, you know, maybe you would see as barriers or whatever, you just... like manage that side, or, you know, don't worry about it too much, really dive into like what's going good.
Yeah.
So that was just like, so I went all in triathlon. But doing that, I had joined a cycling team, joined a swim club, joined a run team. So I was doing, or I never really trained with triathletes.
Okay.
And so then
that's a good thing.
That cycling, I kept up a lot of skills, a lot more from like bike skills, I think. But then the cycling club, like all the dudes just kept saying, oh, you have to race. So then, entered some races that were out like BC Super Week.
Okay, yeah, the Crit Series.
Yeah, and there were like some pros there and stuff.
For sure. You went this year, did you not?
Yeah. They brought Gastown back, which is such a great
event. I've never done that Crit Series.
I also love just like racing in the local area.
For sure.
Weren't even coming back. Like, I think it's such a great... when you have up-and-comers getting to race with, like, top-level athletes.
Yeah.
And then you can see where... you can compare yourself, like, where you're at and where you could be. And a lot of times it's, like, either closer than you think, and then you're like, well, that, you know, you can dream bigger, or you can see that it's reality for some people. Mm. Or if you're like, whoa, that was, like, such a gap from where I am to where I would maybe want to be. I mean, you either respect those athletes more or the journey, or just, like, burns that fire in you to... train more, try to get there.
100%. I think that's cool. Actually, my niece sent me a photo of you. I was like, oh my god, it's my hero. And I was like, yeah, I don't know her, but we work for the same team, but I don't know her, but she seems cool.
Well, I love that, like, a lot of my personality attracts not just a cycling fan, but it... because I think a lot of like male pros, maybe it can be pretty sterile. Like, why would a young person want to follow a male pro unless they're really just really into the cycling?
100%. I agree.
And so what I love is that I bring families together. If someone is really into like the cycling part, the rest of their family can still be fans of me.
Yeah.
Because what I'm about is not just about the high performance cycling, but that is like... the main goal of what I'm about is the high performance side and winning bike races, which I still do. But wow.
Thanks for the reminder.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool. I hear your point like loud and clear. Right. And I think you bring up a really good point in the sense that it's not a very inviting environment. If you go to, I mean, if we look at the world tour as a whole, like how many pro riders, male and female, are in there, and then how many of them are speaking beyond like their spandex outfit and like...
Totally. And the thing about cycling is that it really is for everyone.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who ride bikes and love riding bikes and have their own storylines that they play out on the bike, but they don't follow professional racing because you don't have to. If you're into bikes, you don't have to follow professional racing because the value that a bike gives you and the feeling that a bike gives you, the adventure that you can have, is standalone on its own. It doesn't need to be connected to professional bike racing.
I'd say it's working because most of the people mention you quite often that like that I speak to. If I say I work for this team, they're like, "Oh, do you know Allison Jackson?" You know, so that's cool, right? Yeah. It really shows that it's working in whatever it is you're doing, your TikTok dances.
Yeah,
they're speaking loud and clear.
Great. I mean, I just want to share my joy with others.
So, one of the things that I think was on my mind to ask you today was what the fun side of it actually means to you, because you know, like when you busted out your dance moves at the end of Roubaix, it's like, okay, like that was just natural. She was like, yeah. Dude, let me just like hit this little bust a move real quick, you know? But then other times it's like obviously like skidded, like you make out skits and make up dances with your teammates, yeah. And like, is this like a distraction to get away from like all the seriousness around racing? Is this something like you really like make an effort to do to, because cycling is such a serious environment, training all the time, focused on nutrition, upcoming races, you have to learn the parkour, team tactics, everything is so serious. So do you like intentionally try to carve out time to like do these things with your teammates, like pull everybody aside, like, all right, let's do this. Is that something you use as a tool to kind of like alleviate stress and reduce some of the pressure around you, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved making videos and I've always danced or like moved my body wildly. And so I think it's just like really all that I do comes from just really wanting to do that.
Okay.
When I get to involve my team, so I have like a lot of ideas in the back of my mind that I wait for an opportunity when it can be natural, because I think like I could like some of the like I like to challenge myself. So whether it's like learning a dance that's really hard, and I could spend like an hour just like sessioning the right. dance to get it right, but not everyone's gonna want to do something right. like that. But if I can have like some really fun ideas just in the back of my mind for when like a lull happens, because the thing is you also have to respect like other people will do their sport different or feel pressure at different times in the day or whatever.
Right.
But then if I can have these ideas that I can pull out when it's like a lull moment and they take like maximum 10 minutes. And then when I build trust with my teammates that they know it's only going to take that long, like if I say it's 10 minutes, it's going to take 10 minutes or less, then they're more willing to
okay,
do
so
it
you're,
more.
You're training them.
Totally. But otherwise, if I was like, hey, it'll be 10 minutes and it was 30 minutes, then like they're not going to want to do it next time. So I have all this like background strategy that I use. But yeah, I mean, I just think it's fun. I don't think that you have to be serious and only fun. Like, I don't think they're necessarily in two different boxes. I think you can blend them together. My life is about that blend. You know, we have a conversation and we can be really jokey and fun and switch right away to like a serious intentional conversation. And I think, yeah, you can do that with just in the sport as well. And I think it's also a great mental skill to learn how to have the serious focus and then be able to relieve yourself by giving it up. Because when we take that stress and we take it from a race scenario and then we hold on to it into our daily lives after, the longer it lingers, that's just an extra stress on your body. And at some point, you're going to get real tired or burnt out or whatever. So I think it's just like a good practice. You know, now it's so natural for me to be able to like turn it on and off
right.
when I need. But yeah, I mean, even when I'm in bike racing, like I think if you ask a lot of pros and they, you know, oh, what would you say to a younger person that's getting into bike racing, I think majority of the time you hear like keep it fun, like remember why you started, because I think when you're having fun or when your heart is happy, you're gonna have good legs or you're gonna enjoy it, you're gonna have a longer career,
right?
And I think for me, I just, my life story is gonna be about how much I experienced in life and how I loved it every day.
What kind of rider are you? Like, how do you see yourself as an athlete? Obviously, everybody sees you externally, but when you're looking at yourself internally, how do you see yourself as a rider? Who are you as a rider?
Yeah, well, I'm an entertainer. That's what I would like to be. Like, I want to be someone that's in the race that makes it interesting. So if I'm in a race, it's going to be interesting, because whether I'm a part of the action or move the needle in some way, that being that type of rider then works really well in classic type of races where it's really dynamic. You have to be
a selection from the front.
with selection from the front, you have to be in the right place at the right time at the moment. You know, those races favor boldness. And then as my skill set too, like being a bit more peppy or like what ready to like turn it on or off or turn it on and hold on. So those kind of racing that's like hard and gritty, and taking advantage of opportunities when they come. Those are my favorite kind of races. Mm-hmm. Those are the type of races I tend to do well in. If the weather is worse, it's better for me.
Canadian.
That kind of thing.
It was pretty cool. Like watching Roubaix live this year, it seemed like you'd almost found some new legs as the final approached, and you were really rounding everybody up in that breakaway. That group, you're like, come on, let's go, and you were driving it. You know, at the end of the day, you won, right? But like, you really won that race like 20K to go. You know, when you because the peloton was close. What were they 5-7 seconds, something of that nature?
Yeah. When we were 5K to go, they were inside 9 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, I turned around and I saw the group right there. Like, we turned a corner. I turned around and they were at the corner.
Was that on the cobbles?
It was just before the last sector.
Right.
Grusson cobbles. Yeah, and I think at that moment, because I think all day I'd always taken a turn. I'd never taken a turn off, and, you know, kept the group rolling because you have to start that early. You know, I think maybe near the end you feel a sense of urgency and that makes everyone go harder, but that also happens in the back. So the more time that you can just gain earlier, you have to take advantage of just that momentum of the group.
What were you thinking? Were you like, okay, it's been a bloodbath out here all day. Like, I'm just, everybody behind me is hurting. And if I go, like, I've actually got a chance to win it. Or was it like, well, this is all I got left to play anyway, so I might as well bury myself.
Well, yeah. We're 5K to go. And I was like, we've been out here for 100K already. Or like, you know, we'll 140K and we have 5K left and we're going to give it up now. No way. And even I thought, like, in the group of seven, like, I know I have a pretty good sprint. And I was like, even if I lead this whole group, the last 5K, I was like, at least I could get would be fifth. Because I still back myself.
Right.
I could beat some people. And to get fifth at Paris-Roubaix is still an incredible result.
Absolutely.
And I liked my chances better that way than having the group catch us and trying to save a little bit. Or coming into the final, though, I just would rather much be part of the action. And I think in races previous leading up to that, the more everyone in that group was probably being told, like, don't do more than the next person.
Right.
But then that, once we, if we all start doing that, then we get pretty slow.
Like, yeah,
it starts becoming sort of negative racing. And so I said the whole time I was going to basically show by example, I'm going to ride strong and take a long pull. If people do just a little bit less than me, well, at least there's going to be someone setting what the standard is. And I think that's why like we stayed away for so long. And then by the end, was the only in the last 5K or the last 3K to go was when I started saying to the other girls, like, is this how you want it to end? You know, like, we've been out here for so long.
So you were talking to her, you were saying that.
Just only in the last 3K. Otherwise, I was just riding.
Yeah. Yeah, because it seemed like everybody was just waiting for Lotte to come by and win the sprint, right? Like, that's how it seemed. But you really started cracking the whip and being like, let's go. Let's get this thing rolling. Like, so it's interesting to hear that you were like vocal about what needed to be done out there.
Totally. And I think, you know, when you're, that's why we have a team, right? You have teammates that you're like, hey, if I'm out in the front, it's up to you to be with the best of the best, save your energy and go when you have to go. My card right now that I'm playing is that I'm trying to take this breakaway as far as we can make it. And sometimes you have to convince other riders that this is what cycling is about. You got to take a chance. And this is the card that you're playing right now. So, like, play it well. Don't get into the group and then, you know, second guess the tactic that you've employed.
Yeah.
Like, go all in.
So you probably don't know this, but I was on the teams meeting there with Lauren Stevens the night before, talking about, like, what you guys were going to do. And so I guess you guys had came up with a plan of you to go in the early break, because Lauren was kind of like, there was kind of a weird thing going on with whoever was directing the race. And she was like, I feel like there's no plan and I need to take control and tell everybody what to do. And I was like, all right, Lauren, like, I'll hear you. right? And I'll talk to you. Like, it's not really my job to do that, but just to support her. I don't know. Did that come out the next day? Did Lauren come in the bus and say, like, hey, this is what we need to do?
Well, Lauren and I, we did a lot of, like, I mean, we have the most experience on that team.
Yeah.
So we would always have a lot of conversations about, like, how can we best use our players and our strategy and our experience for these girls. And also, in a way, like, when you have new riders, you sometimes as an experienced rider, you forget that we're not all using the same language or have all the same reference points. So Lauren and I, we would break it down more so that the roles were a bit more specific for the younger riders. So we always would take this tactic plan. And so, you know, the day before, and I kept preaching it too, like, Paris-Roubaix, when we watch the men's side, anyone who gets in an early breakaway, they actually go quite far in the race. Our race has gotten longer each year. And so when we did the recon and we saw this kind of like earlier long lap, it really was perfect for an early breakaway to go.
Cool.
And everything that I would say to my teammates was like, anytime you're near the front, just go for it. Because Paris-Roubaix is a race where if you can get out of the chaos, you have a better chance of staying on your bike, 100%. Having less bad luck. And that's going to be what success is in Paris-Roubaix. That really contributes a lot to doing well. So at any moment, just take hold of your chances and try to make something happen. Because I think for our spring campaign, like, I really wanted to win a lot more races with the team, and what we were doing just wasn't working a lot. And I think it was, we were just waiting too much. And SD Works is such a dominant program that, you know, if they would go and it came back together and another one of them could go, but in these key moments, we were just missing whatever it took to kind of be there. And so we kept just being racing from behind. And so I just said, like, Paris-Roubaix, we got to, you know, try from the front. But really, the goal was not for me to be in the front.
Right.
For Paris-Roubaix, it is a great race for me, for my type of rider. But I'm also good at riding on the cobbles or in the gutter and then back on the cobbles, or in getting into the position that you need to have, be in kind of an earlier front part of the group. So I could probably, the plan was for me to stay in the group as long as possible and then, you know, pick a key moment later to kind of go for it. But you have to also be attentive to what's happening in the race as we're going. And as we were getting basically out of like the first city circuit and, you know, seeing that there is a lot of people that wanted to have a break. And then, you know, the opportunity was, I was there, I was present, and backing up another teammate who was always trying to get into the break or cover the move.
Yeah.
And then just going. And then once you're in it, then that's the role that we're playing.
So two questions I want to ask you before we end the podcast is, last year we saw a huge increase in overall performance of the women's peloton. I think the level, the depth in the top performers was much greater than we had seen in the previous years. Instead of having, you know, five ladies in the final, we'd have 20, right? And it seemed like the average speeds were up, the intensity was up, the level of professionalism was like substantially up across the board. How did you feel the change in the peloton? Did you feel the change? And what do you think that means for next year as we're looking at more resources being invested in women's cycling?
Yeah, I think we actually really saw a big jump in 2020. And part of that was having a lot of the races that were canceled or pushed to later. Everyone just had such a huge block of training.
Right.
And then when athletes came in, everyone's healthy. They've had such a baseline of just training without the extra stress that's when you're racing. And so everyone came in super flying fit. And then I think that changed a bit of how teams thought of how to prepare for races, and having, instead of just from race to race to race, to periodize it with different athletes. And I think also now you need to have the backing of a good team in order to win a race. Whereas I think even just like, 7 years ago, You had this kind of all-rounder type athlete that could win at any race. And yeah, maybe if you had a couple of teammates, it would make a difference for you, but it was always kind of the same type of rider. And now we're getting more specialized. And then, yeah, with a minimum salary, with female athletes earning a wage where it's not just a dream project.
Right.
So they can earn money, they can save for retirement.
Yeah.
It also allows them to spend all the time that they need on training and recovery rather than having a second job
right.
or stressing about what they're going to do after the sport, which then that all is just going to add to better performances, fitter athletes. It's made for such like great dynamic racing. I think also like the product that we have with shorter races is also faster speeds. It's more dynamic at, you have an early breakaway, but it really is not so far
right.
from finish.
Yeah.
And so you can, the sort of tactics that we do is a little different. I think also now where we are racing more with this sort of team where when there is a breakaway, now it's a lot of strong riders. So we really can't just rely on, they'll just get more tired than us and they'll die and we'll catch them. We actually have to time it well with the team, who's going to chase it back. And in the women's peloton, we don't have many years of managing a breakaway well,
right?
Which is really exciting and dynamic for racing because I think, why fans also love so much my Paris-Roubaix win was, they're rooting for this breakaway to make it.
Yeah,
everyone loves
absolutely.
It when it's like a breakaway win, and also because it got so close, everyone thought it was over and this so much drama. But I think like women's racing, it really like breakaways go and the chances of someone winning out of that is really high, and the more that you get wins like mine or like the Olympics in Tokyo where an underdog kind of early breakaway rider won. It also just like brings up the belief that like for anyone else, like that could have been me.
Yeah.
And so like encourages bold racing.
Yeah. That's super cool. Okay. So new team this year, new management, some of the same logos, but it's pretty much brand new program from scratch. You just got here a couple of days ago, but where are you at with everything? How have your meetings been going? What are you thinking about the new team setup? How are you feeling? Where are you at?
Yeah. I mean, early team camp is always so fun because everyone's just like full of energy and like hope for the future and promise and like ambitions and goals, and like we all feed into that into each other, and so it's really exciting. I love the hype. You get your new bikes that are just like, I mean, we have the best paint jobs.
Yeah, those are tricked out now.
Oh man. You get on the new bike. You get the new kit. I love seeing my new Natty Champs jersey.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's good. So all of this stuff that's new, and when you learn of all the different, the technology side of all the products that we're using, and you see just like how much goes into like all these things are going to make me faster. They're going to make me better. And then you start like dreaming bigger, like, if I really can save 20 watts here.
Yeah,
for the whole race per hour, like I am. Yeah, what can't I win really? So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. The personalities that this team attracts are my type of people.
Okay,
EF is the team everyone loves. Like we've got great personalities and characters. I love working with the media team, and a lot of the new riders and stuff that we're meeting are just really fun. Hopefully we keep that kind of attitude all throughout the year. I mean, everyone's fresh and got energy now, it's been really fun and a super supportive group.
So have you thought about any big objectives for next year that you're aiming for?
Yeah. I mean, I really want to be Mrs. Roubaix.
Yeah.
So I think that if I can nail a second win, I went
just,
to
just collecting the rocks.
Collecting the well, I went to the museum that they have their
the shower stalls or
yeah. So they have the shower stalls and then Les Amis de Paris-Roubaix, the friends of Paris-Roubaix, that kind of like maintain the cobblestones.
Right.
They also have a museum, and they've already mounted the trophies for next year.
Okay.
And so there's three types of cobblestones of stone that goes into the cobbles.
Okay.
Some is like this blue granite, another's like a granite, and then another one's kind of a sandstone.
Right.
The one that I have was made out of like granite, so it's like a dark gray kind of color.
Right.
The ones for next year are the sandstone.
Okay.
So it's like a different color. It's beautiful.
I need the trilogy.
Yes, the trilogy.
Yeah. Amazing. Cool. All right. Well, I think that's all we have time for, Allison. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm sure everybody will really appreciate listening to your thoughts. And hopefully we'll see you again.
Yes. Thanks, Zach.